in the morning. When you want the news, you need the front page every hour on the Press Box.
Nothing's riding on this except the First Amendment of the Constitution, freedom of the press, and maybe the future of the country. Not that any of that matters.
And now, the news.
Last night, running Rebel basketball victorious at the Thomas and Mack Center, 98-87 over San Jose, the Spartans in town. Rebels, though, getting great effort from several players, including Amari Hardy, as always, 16 points, 8 assists. Marvin Coleman, another big game, 17 points, 8 assists, 3 rebounds. And Mbake Jong, 12 points, 13 rebounds as well. As they go on and almost hit the century mark, Tyler was there at the Rebels game last night. What did you think as far as the overall set and tone? You talked about the tempo was up.
It's just so much more fun when teams play fast. It doesn't necessarily have any bearing on actually winning games, but it's just so much more fun when teams play fast. I mean, they had 6 guys in double figures last night.
Yeah, that's what you want to see.
It's just great. It's so much more fun to actually watch that. Unfortunately, I think they're going to end up playing slow again the rest of the season. I don't think that's sticking around, because I think that has more to do with San Jose State. But it's so much more fun to watch a team play fast.
When you talked about how this team plays slow, we noticed in the first six, seven games that they were very slow, maybe one of the slowest just as far as analytics go. Do you feel like maybe just because that was a transition period where they were trying to feel each other out and try to find out, all right, who's going to handle the ball? And now maybe have they gotten better as far as their tempo is concerned?
Well, so early on, they played slow, and I think it had a lot to do with their opponents they were playing.
Okay.
Kansas State plays slow. UCLA got Mick Cronin. He plays slow,
yes,
right?
He does.
And
yeah.
Cal has played slow this year, too. Those were three of their first four games were against slow teams. So I think a lot of it had to do with your opponent was a team that wanted to play slow, and UNLV fell into that. But I think as this season has gone on, Otzelberger, he's changed the way he sort of views his team, right? If we go back to the offseason, he was talking about what he wants to implement and, talking about shooting in the first 10 seconds of the shot clock because that's the most efficient way to score, and how, he wants shots up quickly and this is what he wants out of his offense. And now you listen to him last night even, where he's talking about, we need to be a defense first team. We need to pride ourselves on defense. That's what's important to him now, is defense, hustle, not turning the ball over. Where in the offseason it was, let's get quick shots, let's go, go, go. So I think there's been a realization for him throughout the year that we're not going to win if we play fast and try to shoot a lot, because we're not good enough on offense to do that. We need to slow this down. We need to try to play ugly to keep other teams from scoring a lot of points, and hopefully we make enough shots to win the game. I think that's what Otzelberger's sort of come to realize with this team. So I'm not expecting them to play fast. Granted, Nevada and New Mexico, the next two games, are the first and third fastest teams in the conference. So there's a chance the next two are fast, but then the rest of the season, it'll probably be slow again.
How did you think of the spacing last night? Jonah Antonio getting some great shots, end up with 15 points, 5 threes.
They've had good spacing the entire year. That's probably the best thing to take away from this season under TJ Otzelberger, is that the offense has done a terrific job of getting layups, free throws, and threes. The three efficient shots that you want. They've done a tremendous job of doing that. They do not take mid-range jumpers. They don't really take that many bad shots on the floor. So the spacing's always been good. The problem has been they don't make a lot of the shots, right? They don't make a lot of the layups. They're bottom 150 in the country in field goal percentage at the rim. They had a 6-game stretch where they made 25% of their threes. They haven't been shooting well. So
yeah,
the spacing's been good. The fact that they made the threes last night is huge, especially when you get Jonah Antonio to go 5-for-10. That is tremendous. If you can get him shooting 10 threes a game and knocking down 3, 4, 5 of them, that's going to mean so much to this offense in the future, because you got to guard it. He can break the defense when that happens.
Improving to 10-9 on the season, Rebel coach TJ Otzelberger happy after the win, but there still needs to be improvement.
Our guys did a good job when we got stops, getting out and running, and we talk about all the time how we need to play, and I think our guys understood a little bit better there that second half the pace we needed to play with. But we got to get better on some things defensively. I think we got too casual. We started to have some success, and instead of being intentional and stick to the details down there, we let it get away from us. As a coach, those are the things that you want to correct for your group. So I appreciate how we shared the basketball. At the same time, that's not our team defensively, and we got to get that right.
Coming up next is New Mexico on Saturday. Make sure you get your tickets for the 3 o'clock matinee. 739 fans, UNLVtickets.com. New Mexico lost to CSU, Colorado State. On the road, they gave up 102 points.
Yeah, they got crushed.
What am I missing here?
Colorado State made all of their three-pointers. I don't know what the final number was, but at one point, Colorado State was 16 of 23 from three-point range. That's absurd. And that's like, there were probably some open threes, but like, even if you're giving up open threes, 16 of 23 is absurd. So I think a little bit of that is a little bit of an anomaly with Colorado State, because they're not even that good of a three-point shooting team.
Yeah, Nico Medved's really not that kind of like coach. I mean, he's not really employing that kind of system.
So I think that's a little bit of an anomaly, but New Mexico's in a very strange place. J.J. Caldwell still suspended and suing the school right now. Carlton Bragg got dismissed. He was initially suspended because of an attempted rape case against him. They reinstated him with no real explanation. And then he gets arrested for DWI and marijuana possession, and they decide to dismiss him from the team. So they're in a very weird space where they don't have two of their starters. They still, they're what, 15-3, I think, 15-4 this year. So they still have a good record. They're still right there in terms of the top three or four in the Mountain West. But it's like, things don't look great at New Mexico despite the record right now.
And make sure you get the Thomas and Mack. New Mexico's on the ropes. Coverage begins here on ESPN
Las Vegas. The blackout, too. We're black.
We're the blackout. Coverage begins at 1:30. Tyler, Cofield, everybody. Now, look, Raiders, John Gruden is pushing the buttons on some guys. And one of them, I was surprised that they fired Brenson Buckner, the longtime former All-Pro with the Cardinals. He was the D-line coach. He's now been moved to make way for the former Cowboys defensive coordinator and former Lions head football coach, Rod Marinelli.
Yeah, how do you like that 0-16 coming on to be your D-line coach?
Frightening. Because he kind of walks around like he's kind of like half man, half ape. He's got his arms kind of like gesticulating around. Looks like one of the orangutans in Any Which Way But Loose. Like, right turn, Clyde, and he starts hitting Clint Eastwood in the face. You know, Rod Marinelli, though, really saved his career when he went to the Cowboys, because they needed a guy that was going to take veterans coming off the couch and just plugging dudes in left and right. And you know what? Once he finally got his guys in there, they were kind of average. But in the first year, first 2 years, Marinelli was able to get the most out of whatever he was given in Dallas. And maybe that's the kind of situation he's going to be thrown into now.
So the thing that fascinates me the most about this is John Gruden trying to go back in time. He won a Super Bowl, and Rod Marinelli was his defensive line coach. And that Tampa Bay defense was number one in DVOA that year when they won the Super Bowl.
That was Tony Dungy's defense, and John Gruden happened to, you know, come by for a year.
So John Gruden, his most successful season was with Rod Marinelli as a D-line coach. Now he's like, oh, I can hire him as my D-line coach again. Of course I'm going to do that. The problem is that was two decades ago.
Yeah, right.
That was a really long time ago that Rod Marinelli was his D-line coach and they won the Super Bowl. And if you look at Marinelli's time with the Cowboys, he was the D coordinator for the last six. He was the D-line coach for the last seven. Their defensive line over the last 7 years hasn't been good. They have not been top half in the league in pressure rate, sack rate, or stuff rate, which is a run-stopping measure for your defensive line. They haven't been top half very often. Like, they have not had good defensive line play. So you bring that over, he's 70 years old. He's got a lot of experience, right? Some of it good, some of it bad. So he could come and help turn Max Crosby and Cleveland Furrell into a dominant young edge-rushing duo, but his recent history isn't that great. Like, it's not something you fire Brenson Buckner to go get 70-year-old Marinelli.
I like Brenson Buckner. I thought it was a really good pick and a great guy that can, like, motivate, communicate. And look at what he did. It was able to get a team that had, like, 12 sacks to 30. You know, like, that's something that's really remarkable, the fact that they had a great turnaround there. And then you go and shelve the guy. But you know what? Is Cleveland Furrell and Max Crosby, Warren Sapp, and Simeon Rice? Because those are the old days, like you said, going back in time. That's a 2003 Super Bowl.
Yeah, I am the talent is not quite there. Like, as good of a season as Max Crosby had, and Cleveland Furrell, fourth overall pick, not great, but still had a decent season as a rookie. Like, as good as they could be, it's still not a great defensive line. Like, you're not looking at this defensive line and thinking, oh yes, this is one of the top 10 defensive lines in football. You're still looking at this as probably a bottom 10 defensive line in the NFL. And to be honest, Max Crosby's probably going to have a lot of regression this year. Like, he's a big candidate to regress because he had 10.5 sacks. His sack to pressure ratio was like 38% this year. The average across football is like 25%. Like,
yeah.
So when he got in the backfield, he got a sack. He didn't get there and miss sacks very often. So he's a big candidate for regression. So I don't think the defensive line is going to be spectacular next year unless they bring somebody in. If Max Crosby is your number two edge rusher, you've probably got a good good defensive line.
Yeah.
But I think they're going into next year saying, he's our guy. He's our number one. And he'll be fine, but I don't know how good your defensive line will be overall.
You're asking a lot. There's a sophomore slump, and there's going to be plenty of film on somebody that you can go and start giving them different looks, and you're going to find available weaknesses eventually. And they're going to find that out. Also, with the Raiders, what are we doing with the roof here? Installation of the translucent roof, the $2 billion stadium, is, according to some people, months behind schedule. Officials say, though, it should be ready for the start of the next season. We can start the year off with a no roof. I mean, do you know any roofers? Can we get this thing up? I mean, an independent monitor is working with the stadium, says a target date could be in jeopardy.
So the roof is delayed. It was originally supposed to be done in November. Now it's May is what they're looking at. And the independent monitor is saying, basically, the roof delay itself isn't going to affect the stadium open date. Their concern, though, is if it rains pretty much any time between now and May, that it could ruin stuff on the inside of the stadium that they expected the roof to be covering by this point, and that could ultimately delay the stadium from opening. The thing that I find funny is the comparison with this stadium and the Falcon Stadium, Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
Both have had roof problems. Both stadiums are trying to do this new roof that's never been done before.
Yeah,
and Mercedes-Benz, it was like a camera lens opening and closing, something stupid like that.
Or a candy jar top or something
And they couldn't get it to close properly. So that stadium was delayed. Like, it was supposed to open, I think, in March of the year that it opened. It didn't open until August. Like that, and Atlanta United, the MLS team in Atlanta, was supposed to play their whole season there. They had to play at Georgia Tech for like 75% of their first season. So I find it fascinating that two stadiums, I think those are the last two stadiums with roofs to be opened, are like, let's put on a brand new roof, and both have had problems with it. Both are like, oh, we're having trouble doing this thing that nobody's ever done before. Might affect the start date or the open date for the stadium, which would screw the UNLV football team and the Raiders. Like, if they, like, the Raiders are supposed to play preseason games there. If this is delayed by that, that's the other part.
That's the first week of August.
Their margin of error is basically nothing. The whole time it's been, we're going to finish this on July 31st. The Raiders are probably supposed to play a preseason game there in what? August 16th, August 20th, something like that. So if you get delayed by 2 weeks, you're missing a preseason game. You get delayed by a month, you're missing a UNLV game. You get delayed by 2 months, you're missing Raiders game. So a two-month delay doesn't feel like that long of a delay when it's a two-and-a-half-year project, but that's all it takes for this to really screw up the football season for UNLV and the Raiders.
Oh, this is painful to watch. And real quick, before we take a break here, what do you think about the OBJ handing out money after the LSU championship game? Because now the story is LSU has to now work with the SEC and NCAA to make sure that there are no violation of NCAA rules. Here's Joe Burrow on from Bleacher Report talking about, oh, yeah, we got some money.
I'm not a student athlete anymore, so I can say yeah.
Yeah, that's sick. How much money? He was just handing out cash.
Yeah.
I was thinking that it would have been awesome if Odell just like printed fake cash and started handing out just with as
his,
the flex.
With his face on it.
Yeah. Like, oh shit. You look at it and you try to pay for a drink, you're like, wait, this sir. This is Monopoly money.
Sir, this isn't real.
It's actually
money.
Worth more in Louisiana.
That's sick that he was just handing out cash. How much cash did he bring?
I don't know.
But it was real money.
I love the fact that LSU tried to say it was fake money.
Yeah.
Like, where did that come from? Did somebody tell? Did somebody say that? Or was that what LSU just came up with to try? Like, they're like, oh, it's fake money. Why in the world would Odell Beckham Jr. be handing out fake money?
LSU calls it novelty bills.
Like, what is that? Like, Odell Beckham printed up his own money to put, like, that makes no sense, but that's what LSU went with. That's what their initial reaction was. Ah, it's fake money. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's fake money. No violations with fake money. It's the Press Box Morning Show here on a Thursday. Tyler Bischoff here with me. You, of course, you know I'm the host of Technically Correct at 10 a.m., as well as our part of our Run and Rebel coverage here on ESPN Las Vegas. Now is the time for your calls at 364-1100. We're going to be joined by Dennis Bernstein around 8:35 from the fourth period as we get a national perspective on the Gallant firing and DeBoer hiring. But we want your phone calls. Is George McPhee on the hot seat? And did Bill Foley put him there? And will this team even make the playoffs? And by golly, is Peter DeBoer better than Gerard Gallant? We want your phone calls at 364-1100, 364-1100. Back after this.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas and call the show 702-364-1100.
Coaches can't play, right? They're not the ones on the ice.
And I just wanted to make a point to a comment about fans wanting, you know, winning. Yeah, I love to win. I'm a season ticket holder. This morning, as a couple days ago, I got my notice for renewal. Prices have gone up. I sit center ice. I'm fortunate enough to do so. This morning, I changed my mind. I am not renewing my ticket.
That was Kelly from yesterday here on ESPN Las Vegas as we were dealing with the aftermath, the suddenness of the Gallant departure as we were taking your phone calls, and we'll do now. 364-1100. We'll join Dennis Bernstein at the bottom of this hour. Tyler Bischoff is here with me, and he created some great questions for you to think about and to ponder, including, is George McPhee on the hot seat? And how much has Bill Foley put him there? And will this team even make the playoffs given where we're at now? And how much better is Pete DeBoer than Gerard Gallant? As we'll start taking your phone calls at 364-1100. Carl's on the line with us. Carl, what do you think about all this?
I think, you know what? I was listening to the Dave Gosher, Shane Knighty, and Lawless podcast, and they were all in agreement that something had to change, and this happened to be what the change was. I think that McPhee kind of did put himself on the hot seat. I don't think Foley did it on purpose. If that was, that would just seem outrageous that he would lose. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, yeah, it's a business, and that's what it's all about, is bringing home championships regardless of what the situation is. And one of the things that people need to realize, fans need to realize, that you got yourself, these players have got themselves a 10 to 15 game, or about a 10, 12 game trial period to either get themselves out of what they're lack of production and everything else, or these fans are going to really be up in arms when player, high-profile players leave this team if they have to make moves.
So what do you gauge a success for Pete DeBoer? Like, do they need to make the Western Conference Finals? Like, what would you consider a successful season?
I make the playoffs. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you get to the playoffs, you got yourself a chance. I mean, we all know that if you make the top six, you know, you're one of the 16 teams in, everyone's got a chance. That's why you play the game. Make the playoffs would be a success. Get to the Western Conference Finals, that would be a major success. And obviously the ultimate success would be to win the Stanley Cup. That's granted with the teams out east, the way they played against teams out east and everything so far this year, and teams like St. Louis, it's going to be a tough stretch. But first things first, get the team going in the right direction, make the playoffs, and see what happens. You just got to get to the dance. That's the big thing.
So is DeBoer better than Gallant? Do you feel that way now?
I don't know. I mean, who's to say he is? Who's to say he isn't? I mean, you look at the roster he had in San Jose, and he couldn't do anything with it. Granted, you sign Erik Karlsson to that major deal. That's not on him. But it's on him to make those roster decisions and make those things happen and put himself in the best position to do it. It's hard to say.
Okay.
But, I mean, Gallant obviously was, like I made the comment yesterday, his unwillingness to make changes until it was too late. And there's some players that should have been parked up in the press box. Send a message.
Okay.
And from what it sounds like, Pete DeBoer is not afraid to send a message to players and get this team going in the right direction.
All right, Carl, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's interesting. People still want to wait and see, but I think they know the credentials of DeBoer is something that they should be pretty happy with. That it's, I don't want to call it an upgrade in a way, but it's a guy that can get there again.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they, you can't really say they downgraded.
No.
Like, you can't say with certainty that Pete DeBoer is worse than Gerard Gallant, but I don't know that you can say with certainty that he's better than Gerard Gallant either. I think it has a lot to do with how the front office sees the two of them and whether the front office, I mean, they think Pete DeBoer is a better chance, gives them a better chance to win, and it probably has to do with them agreeing with the way Pete DeBoer sees hockey more than they agree with the way Gerard Gallant sees hockey.
All right, Chris, fire away. What do you think about the changes?
Okay, so the way I compare this is one with Gerard Gallant. It's kind of like an artist when they come out with that first album and everybody's hyped and it's successful and they win Best New Artist, and then you get the sophomore jinx and that second season or that second album isn't as great. But over time, if you look at it, some artists, as their career progresses, it gets better and better and better. I think that they pulled the trigger too quick here. I think that you should have let him continue running the team they were running. Okay, you had a four-game losing streak. It happens. It's professional sports. Sometimes you know, it's a longer season in baseball than it is in hockey, but still you get that first, second quarter of the season slump, or you just get tired, and then you guys, after the break, they get rejuvenated, and they're coming out, and they're like gangbusters again. Again, I think they pulled the trigger too quickly here. If you look at it, both of these coaches got their teams to the Stanley Cup Finals. Both of them lost in the Stanley Cup Finals. So you can't discount them because they did lose in the Stanley Cup Finals, but they got their teams there, respectively. So it's interesting to see how this is going to play out now.
Do you feel that McPhee is on the hot seat?
Probably not, because they'll probably move some people and get back under the cap or free up some cap space.
Justification.
So he won't be in jeopardy. Yeah.
Okay. You know, the thing about that first album, you're a wild success, you have to go on that big world tour, and you're just wiped out from all the sex and the drugs. I mean, come on, Chris, you know how it is.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened to them. They got all the success. I mean, they came to a town where there was no hockey, and these guys were like overnight sensations. So the town got behind them. Everybody rallied. Games are always sold out. So, you know, that success is hard to follow up. And then when you go into that second season, and like they did, they moved a few people and, you know, replaced some people. The chemistry wasn't quite the same. So they have to build that chemistry back up and that trust. And, I mean, the pieces will start, everything will start to click. Pieces will fall in place. But I think they just did this too quickly, like they do in a lot of instances in a lot of major sports franchises. They get rid of the coach too soon before the finished product is done.
All right.
Take my man Brett Brown in Philly. Trust the process.
Oh, good call. Great comparison. Very good job. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. All right. I like the perspective. I like the comparison.
The problem is, though, is the first album was terrific. The second album was okay. And the third album was so bad that halfway through it, they're like, nope, we got to pull the plug on this. Like,
right.
Third album's been terrible so far.
Yeah, the third album's not getting any sales. Yeah. It's already hit the bargain bin. Yeah.
Can't even make it through five songs without your ears hurting.
Marty's up next. Marty, what do you think about the idea of this team? Can it make the playoffs? Can it survive the transition?
Oh, I think so. It's hard. It's one of those things you run in spurts in hockey. I mean, 2 weeks ago we were leading the Pacific Division. It's one of those hockey. It's you got to be bad to not make the playoffs. And if you don't make the playoffs, then you really have to look at yourself and say, where are you going? I thought of something over the last day or so. It was a comment that Stone made about 2 weeks ago, and it's about the same amount of time it's been since he scored a goal. Stone made a comment saying that guys weren't working hard, and then he said, and that comes from the top. Mm-hmm. It starts at the top, and the only person he could be talking about with that is Gallant. And it coincided with him going through this crazy slump of really being invisible. And then it's almost like the worst thing that can happen for a head coach or a manager is your players stop playing for you. And I think if you look at the tapes of the last couple of weeks since Stone had made that comment, Stone stopped playing for Gallant. And you can make excuses for Marchessault being out and that the line was changed, but I was at four of those home games where Stone was there, and I was screaming. He was in the wrong position almost every time. He was passing when he should be shooting when he was should be passing. It was almost like he quit playing for him. So I think if you have a guy who's making $9 million a year and he's supposed to be your leader and he's saying that the coach is not the leader, you probably fire your coach.
Wow, great stuff, Marty. Thank you for the call.
All right, thanks.
Well, what do you think of that? Does that go along with what Pacioretty was saying?
Maybe a little bit. And if you look, Gerard Gallant is not the guy. I mean, he tells you every time, he's not the guy that's going to come on and say, hey, I'm here to motivate you. Like, we just saw that with when they lost their third game in a row and they were going down 3-0 in every game. He said, I'm not the guy that's going to go in and motivate the team. I'm not the guy that's going to run in there with pom-poms. So that I think that has something to do with why they made the change, is that Gerard Gallant isn't the guy that is there to he doesn't view himself as, I'm going to motivate the team. He views it as the players need to motivate themselves.
He's always been like that. That's Tyler. I'm Clay. Let's take a 90-second commercial break and then join a national perspective with Dennis Bernstein from the fourth period. He's on deck next.
On ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.
Back here on the Press Box Morning Show. Thanks again for all your phone calls. We love them. We need them. And we're here for you as we continue to conversate and follow the story about Gerard Gallant's firing and the Vegas Golden Knights hiring of Pete DeBoer. Tyler, you just found something from Justin Emerson from Las Vegas Sun. What he's at the morning skate in Ottawa. What does he see?
Yeah, Justin Emerson just said, looks like an optional morning skate in Ottawa. Pete DeBoer is not out there.
So it sounds like we got great management right off the get.
New head coach is not there for his first practice.
Well, it's a 12-hour layover, for God's sakes. It's hard to get to Ottawa. Let's join Dennis Bernstein now from the fourth period, fourthperiod.com, national perspective, and a longtime hockey writer, and he's here with us. Thank you, Dennis, for making time for us today. Good morning. How are you?
Morning, Clay and Colin. Doing great. Big surprise there in Vegas, but let's talk about the change.
Yeah, let's talk about it. You know, it's funny to think like 2016 when Gallant got broomed from Florida. And we had you on then because the Golden Knights were just in infancy and they were trying to build a team. And you, one of the first things you said was like, you know, the first thing George McPhee should do is go find Gerard Gallant and hire him as a head coach because he's the best guy available. How has your vision of Gerard Gallant changed from then to now?
I don't think it's changed much. I think the team has changed a lot. And I think that, look, I get it. I've been on social media. The fans are upset. There's ticket price raising next year. Everybody likes Gerard. Turco's a good guy. Here's the thing. I'm not putting this on the coach that much. This is a very different team than the one from two seasons ago. And you know why? Everybody got paid, guys. Right? I watched that team. And early in the first season, I went out and sat ice-side and when they played the Kings, and I'm like, wow, this team battles you every inch of the ice. Like, they're tenacious on every single shift. Like, that team is gone. Fans, coach, that's a different team because guess what? Stone got paid. Pacioretty got paid. Carlson got paid. Everybody got paid. Everybody's living in Summerlin. Like, this is totally on this team. Like, there's no reason this team shouldn't be 6 to 8 points ahead of Arizona in the first place. There's no reason for it. Now, the other issue is, like Pete DeBoer, and Pete's going to have to come with the same problem, if you look at the goaltender, right, Marc-Andre Fleury has been great. He's been really, you know, really carrying the badge for this team ever since the expansion draft they had at the draft. But his save percentage in the first season was .927. It's now .906. When your goalie doesn't make the saves he should, you're looking for a job. It happened in San Jose with Pete DeBoer. And that's why Pete's coaching this team now, guys.
Yeah.
Like, Martin Jones has been horrific. Like, I've watched those games. And you look at percentages and say, okay, it's subpar. But when you watch Martin Jones play, he couldn't stop normal shots. So that's why Pete's there. And you guys mentioned they've both been to a cup final. But when I watched the last couple of games, I watched the L.A. game, and L.A.'s in a rebuilding state, and they go down 4-0 to L.A. at home. I mean, and this, look, I know this team, they shouldn't be 14-10-3 at home. Like, they should be way better. This team should be way, way better. So when guys like Gary Lawless go out and say this is performance-based, I see the point. I absolutely see the point because as we sit here right now, if Chicago wins their game in hand, they will be 2 points behind the Golden Knights. And that shouldn't be happening. So I have no problem with it. And you know the owner is involved. I mean, you go in the locker room, the owner's there after wins, and first season is there all the time. So I'm certainly he had his blessing. So I because we're so reactionary in the NHL, because it happened to, you know, it doesn't matter what contract you have or how much you get paid. Pete DeBoer was on the sidelines. Pierre Laviolette's still on the sidelines. And so Mike Babcock. So the moral to the story is don't have a four-game losing streak. You're probably employed as an NHL coach. So I think it's a bit reactionary. But when I watched that end of that homestand, I'm like, yeah, they lost to Columbus. They lost to L.A. They lost to Buffalo on the road. They better beat Ottawa, right? And because, but I'm laying this really on the team because this is not the tenacious, like, golden misfits that I know that went to a cup final. It's a very different team. And the other thing is, I know you had asked about Jordan McPhee in the hot seat. Like, when you go to, like, Cap Friendly or whatever, and you look at their distribution of money on this team, right? $18 million in cap hit on the defense. Everybody in the league knows this team needs another solid defenseman. They spent all their money on forwards, unlike San Jose. And if that's the one thing that Pete's going to have to get used to. San Jose spent a lot of money on their defense, not so much on their forwards they paid the price for. Same thing here. They need to get another defenseman. How they do it with the cap situation, do they have to trade a player of consequence? I think they do. But they need better from Marc-Andre Fleury, and they just need more tenacity from this team. I just think, again, I'm not going to call the team soft, but I think they're very, very comfortable, and hopefully Pete can make them uncomfortable, and they can start playing the tenacious way they did a couple of seasons ago.
So if you look at the roster, and you're pointing out that they didn't spend very much money on the defensemen, and that Marc-Andre Fleury, I think it's his last 22 games, his save percentage is .891. Like, he's been right. A very, very bad goalie for a pretty long stretch now. How does the coach get fired for that? Like, neither of those things would seem to be Gerard Gallant's fault, his goalie not being good and the team not spending any money on defensemen.
Well, you got to be culpable, right? There's accountability for this. I saw that first period against Los Angeles. I'm like, what's going on here? There's something going on. And the team is mediocre all year. This is not something, because I think that's it, to be honest with you. I think it's part of it, but sometimes you can outscore your mistakes. And there's something off. And I mentioned this on my SiriusXM show about a month ago. I go, this team should be way better. They should be way better, to be honest with you. That's the situation. So you could blame the defense not being the quality it needs to be a contender. You can blame, you know, Fleury for not being as good. But you know what? That's the coach's job, to get this team to play better, more motivated. And those last couple of home games, and I'll go back to those, that wasn't a team that we all knew that, you know, it was everybody's darling. So they should just be better. When you have leaders like Stone and Pacioretty and Paul Stastny, veteran guys, you shouldn't be coming at them playing that way. And that's what happens when you see teams come out and play in certain manners like they did against Los Angeles. That's a warning sign. And I just think that there may be some other issues that we don't know about. And I could say that, you know, they need another defenseman better than, you know, Brady McNabb or Nate Colden or John Merrill on the blue line. But I think ultimately the responsibility rests with the coach, and that's what they pay for. And it's not fair. I'm not saying, but you can't fire 23 players. I can't really make any trades right now. It'd have to be a dollar for dollar trade. So the only move to get this team out of its mediocrity will be to have a different voice in the room.
That's Dennis Bernstein, longtime writer with the NHL, senior writer with TheFourthPeriod.com, SiriusXM host with The Hot Stove on Saturday, as well as the NHL Network. Would you have the idea of, like, lineup changes for the Golden Knights? Do you feel like Pete DeBoer is going to start tinkering with what the first and second lines should be? And what would you do if you had that chance?
Clay, I don't think he's going to do it off the bat, because he's got to know these players. I know they're in the same division. He probably knows a lot of these players. I need to give him this road trip to figure out what's going to go on here with this team. Does he make changes with respect to structure and how they're going to go about it, and line combinations? I wouldn't off the bat. That would be kind of a little bit too dangerous. I think you have to go with what you know. And plus, you know, they also, you know, whack the assistant coach. I think he's got to really take the measure of this road trip to see where this team is. And like somebody called said, I don't expect them to fall out of the race, and they could very well be in first place by the time they get back to Vegas after this road trip. So I think Pete will take his time. He's a veteran coach. He's certainly not going to panic. And if you know Pete DeBoer, he doesn't panic about anything. Right? He's not going to really panic right now, so he's going to be really calm, cool, and collected. He has to assess what he has here, and he sees he needs to make some structural changes with respect to line combinations. I think he'll do so. But I think it goes back to, you know, can they defend better? And like, you know, Kyle mentioned, they need better from Marc-Andre Fleury. It's as simple as that. Now, that's hand in glove, right? I mean, you know, if your defense isn't that good and he's getting high decent chances, he's stopping and he's not stopping them, that's another issue, right? So I think he's really got to assess maybe the defensive side of the puck more so than the offensive side of the puck, because you look at the names Stone, Pacioretty, Stastny, Carlson, Smith, Matt Marcia, so they're going to score goals. I think they have to defend better, and if it's not just the goaltending, then he's got to figure out some other options here. So he's got to really take this road trip to assess what he has there under the hood and then try to make changes if he does need to beat you. And maybe just a wake-up call for the team, you know. It's sometimes that does work. If you look at Toronto, right, and, you know, Mike Babcock, renowned, a great resume, has won the Stanley Cup. They went to Sheldon Keefe, and they played great, and they've got talent too. So it just may be the wake-up call, and I think that's part of it, to be honest with you, because, again, I think this team has been way too comfortable all season, and now they're not so comfortable because Tuck is gone.
If this team doesn't make the playoffs, or even if they do and lose in the first round to somebody like Vancouver, what happens to George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon?
Yeah, of course they're in trouble. Like, the expectations are, you know, going back to the Cup final. That's where it should be. And plus, to be honest with you, other than St. Louis and maybe Colorado, right, they're the most, I think they're more talented than probably St. Louis. They're not as mentally tough as St. Louis, and St. Louis isn't great, but they're in the top three with respect to talent. They're more talented than any team in this division. Right, so going to the playoffs, they should be the 2 seed, and they should win a couple of rounds. Now, if they go to the conference final and lose to either Colorado or St. Louis, okay, fine. If they go out earlier than that, then yeah, then you have to question how they built this team. And you have to watch how they do in the playoffs. And they lose because the defensive side of the puck isn't good and they don't have the defenders. Then yeah, then they made a mistake. They made a miscalculations. Maybe you should have made a trade. As good as Max is playing, I love Max and I know him from Montreal. Maybe you should have traded for a defenseman instead of a forward, or not bring in Mark Stone at $9.5 million. So I think it all revolves around the playoffs, because now there are expectations, and maybe they're too high. Maybe the first year was just the wrong set of expectations to set for this team. But when you look at the talent up front, I think you should get to them. You should be able to win the division, get out of the division, and that puts you in the conference final. If they get there, I think the management team is in place. If they go out before them, like you mentioned, yeah, I think you have to look at how they constructed this team.
All right, then maybe you should, the old song, Getting to Know You. Who is Pete right. DeBoer, and how is he different than Gerard Gallant, who we knew as a player's coach? What are the compare and contrast with Pete DeBoer now, and what should we get used to?
I think you'll get better answers in press conferences from Pete. I think Pete's a really bright guy, and he will go into depth. You know, and at the end, you could see that the Chuck was getting really testy with the media. I've seen the press conferences, and he's really, really yeah. You could feel there was pressure coming from somebody because the team wasn't performing. Pete's very matter-of-fact, smart guy. You know, he's been to a cup final, you know, a couple times. So I think that the media will like him better. I think he'll get more definitive answers. I mean, because Tuck would never give you anything. I mean, I've been to press conferences with him. He doesn't really get anything. People go into depth and detail about what's going on with the team, where they need to improve, where they need to get better. And I think that he will mesh well with the team. This is a veteran team now at this point in time. This is no longer an expansion franchise. I think he's a good choice. And I know people are saying he's not as good as Gallant. Let's see. You know, if Marc-Andre Fleury makes some saves now, he's going to be better than Gallant. It's as simple as that. So I think it's a good move. He's a veteran guy. And I think he'll put some calm around this team. He's going to certainly motivate them and say, look, you know, I'm in here because you guys have failed. Now, what are you going to do to turn this around? And the thing about it is, the way this division is, guys, 1 3- or 4-game winning streak puts you in first place. So it's not some disaster. It's not like you're 15 points out or something like that, like New Jersey, you know, what's happened in New Jersey with John Hines. I think he needs to just make some gradual adjustments, assess what he has, and I think the players will like him. From my experience in San Jose and New Jersey, I think that will be a good move, because if you wanted to make a move, this guy's more than equipped to put this team where it needs to be.
In the overall Pacific Division, what team worries you the most? Who looks stronger out of, like, Arizona, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, and Winnipeg, and Vegas?
Can I take a pass on that? And none of them scare me, to be honest with you.
Nah. I mean,
it's not a very good business. Now, look, the last month, they played better. Calgary's been better. Edmonton got back on board. Arizona, I get it. They got Taylor Hall, but, you know, they're still playing 500 or less. Nobody scares me. That's why I think part and parcel why some of the changes made. Like, I would expect that in the beginning of December, this team should have been in first place, and with a little bit of distance between themselves and closer to a St. Louis than to a Chicago. Like, they should be the second best team in the conference when you look at their talent. And they're not. So I would not be afraid of anybody, to be honest with you. I think anybody in the Pacific, I think that Vegas can, and I would still pick them. They were my sleeper to go to the Cup. Well, they weren't a sleeper. They were my pick to go to the Cup final. At the beginning of the season, then in Florida. I love Florida as a sleeper. There's no reason why they can't win the division, and I wouldn't be afraid of any of these teams, because when you line up pound for pound against all the other rosters, like Edmonton, I get it. They have Connor. They have Leon. Those are two good players. They have no depth. They're terrible 5-on-5. Their goaltending is shaky. Like, if these players play up to their potential with Pete DeBoer, they should win the division and be a 2 seed and probably get to a conference final. So I would not be intimidated by any of the teams in the Pacific. I think if they get on back on track in their final, you know, 20, 25 games, they should win the division. At least if I was Bill Foley, that would be my expectation.
It's Dennis Bernstein, senior writer with TheFourthPeriod.com, host of SiriusXM, The Hot Stove, as well as the NHL Network reporter, and the chair of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Thank you so much, Dennis, for your time. It's great hearing your perspective. Let's do it again down the road.
Clay Tall, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. Great talking to you.
Follow him on Twitter at DennisTFP as well. All right, let's take a break. Let's absorb what Dennis said. We'll come back in a few minutes here on the Press Box Morning Show here at ESPN Las Vegas.
When breaking 2020.
again to Dennis Bernstein from the fourth period. Great comments and perspective on the Golden Knights. You know what? There were some things in that interview that that came out strong is that, you know, maybe the expectations for Gallant were to keep providing that Golden Misfits attack style that he had in that first year. And he's right. You know what? You could only think of complacency afterwards, or at least not even complacency, but if the fact that you might not see the same kind of attacking presence that you saw in that first year, it only is going to look like complacency after that because nobody can ever play at that pace. Nobody ever has.
I think ultimately Gerard Gallant got done in by his own team, and I don't know so much that it was the attacking part of it as much as it was they just can't actually finish shots on net, and their goaltending hasn't been good.
Yeah.
Like, this team is, they're 22nd in the NHL in shooting percentage right now. Like, across the board, they create more chances than their opponents. They get more shots than their opponents. Like, they're better than their opponents
they
at
are.
Creating.
Yeah.
They're 22nd in the league in shooting percentage. They don't finish anything at all. Like, you look at that, the last game that Gerard Gallant coached in. Right, there was a sequence where Max Pacioretty and Chandler Stephenson both had a chance to score when the goalie didn't have a stick, and neither one of them could even put it on net, which, and that doesn't even hurt your shooting percentage, right? If you just completely miss the net, it doesn't hurt your shooting percentage. So, like, I think that's been a big factor, and then you throw in that Marc-Andre Fleury has been below 900 for his last 22 games, and Malcolm Subban is below 900 save percentage for the entire season. They don't get good goaltending. Like, the goaltending has been very, very bad, and I think that's what ultimately is the problem. Like, the way they've played has been fine. Like, the like you sit back and if you didn't know that, like, you had to score to win hockey games, you just watched and you're like, oh, that team's always got the puck. Oh, they're always shooting more than the other team. Like, they're better, but they don't actually score enough, and they give up too many easier goals than usual.
The observation that Dennis had brought out was that DeBoer is now inheriting a team that is forward-heavy, whereas in San Jose, they were stockpiling defensemen, and good ones, too.
Yeah, they. I think that was that's probably the best thing Gerard Gallant did in his first season, and really the last two, is they don't have high-paid defensemen.
No.
Like, it's not a talent-heavy defensive group, but through whatever system Gerard Gallant has used, and they changed it this year, they've limited chances. They have not given up that many chances throughout this history of this organization. So he did a good job of getting the most out of that talent on the defensive group. But as Pete DeBoer comes in, he was used to having Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, right? He's used to having all of the money was spent.
Did
on
we get
those
the wrong
two.
Senator? Did we? What would this team look like with Erik Karlsson?
Well, this year Erik Karlsson hasn't been very good.
No, he's, and you know what? And it's hard to figure out. Like, he doesn't seem like he wanted to play at all. Like, he seems like taking himself out of the game, wouldn't show up for practices, things like that.
But Erik Karlsson that we had seen the previous couple of years, if they had that Erik Karlsson, it's the biggest need on this team right now. Is hey, you need defensemen that can move the puck. You need defensemen that can score. So it would be a big help. But like, if you were trading Erik Karlsson for Mark Stone, I think I'd rather have Mark Stone. I think Mark Stone has a bigger impact on the game for you and is overall a better player.
Absolutely. I mean, anyone that leading the lead in the takeaways department, I mean, the stuff that he's able to do with his stick, no one else in this league can do that.
So if you were, would they be better off? I mean, maybe the roster construction would be better, but at the end of the day, the team's struggling to score. Mark Stone's one of your best bets to score. Like, and he's a better bet than Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson gets you a lot of assists, but you're not getting assists if guys can't actually finish shots off. So I don't think they'd be better off that way, but there is certainly something to, hey, where'd you spend all your money? Mm-hmm. Oh, you spent it on forwards. And I think you also look at the bottom of the roster. Nick Holden's making $2.2 million. Cody Eakin's making $4 million. Ryan Reeves is making $2.275 million.
Like, good God.
Or $7.5 million. Like, those are three bottom-of-the-roster players that are taking up a big chunk of your salary cap, and you could have more talented players making similar deals.
That's the host of Technically Correct. You know him, Tyler Bischoff. He's helping me out today. It's awesome today. He'll be here tomorrow as well, filling in for Ed Grady. Technically Correct coming on at 10 o'clock. And, of course, part of our Runnin' Rebel basketball coverage and a whole lot more. So grateful for you, Tyler. Thank you for doing this. Now in the next hour, we're going to have good old Coach Joe Esposito. We're going to go over Runnin' Rebel basketball. But then we're going to go into a new realm with J.R. Starkus and Sam Merritt, where they are going to bring in the first ever hard coffee beer. as we'll also get into other low-calorie beers and other stuff like that. Are you looking forward to this third
hour? I don't even know what hard coffee beer means. I'm not even sure what this tells you, really.
What does it even mean, like hard coffee? What do you add to coffee that's going to make it hard? Tequila?
I assume so, but then beer's in there. How does that work?
I don't know. We're going to find out that and more as Tyler is here with me until the next hour here on The Morning Show.
The Golden Knights stay north of the border for a matchup with the Montreal Canadiens. Listen Saturday with Puck Drop at 4 on Fox Sports Las Vegas.